learned in Fallsburg, my sort of autobiographical musical comedy. It's a hip new take on the Catskills from a baby boomer who grew up in the Catskills in the 70s. We open at the Triad on Monday, August 3rd. We have previews on the 1st and the 2nd. Please check out our website, FallsburgShow.com, and we hope to see you there. You'll have a great time. And I'm talking with Rabbi Paul Solomon on UNC Radio on Days Gone By.
Oh, shalom, shalom, everyone. Shalom, my friends, my enemies. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am very excited. Do you remember the Broadway show Catskills on Broadway with the old Catskills comedians? Well, now there is a show that is treating the Catskills, and it's off Broadway. It's by this fellow, this talented multi-actor, singer, instrumentalist, producer. His name is Gary Waldman, and his show is called What I Learned in Fallsburg. It's playing, as we speak, at Stage 72 up on West 72nd Street and Columbus Avenue in New York. Gary Waldman is with us in the neighborhood to talk about his years of producing, of doing theater all over the country, and his current show. So welcome and shalom, Gary!
Shalom, Rabbi Saul.
Why, thank you.
How are you?
I am good, thank God. And, you know, I've got all these usual ailments. My hip is hurting, and, you know, there's a skin lesion that I'm worried about. But other than that, I'm good. How are you?
Me too. My hip, it's a little, you know, Penny Landau came up with this great tagline for the show, the Hip New Catskills Musical. Hip, but you got it all mixed up. It's really the new Hip Catskills Musical.
The new Hip
Catskills. I'm just doing this to pay for a new hip.
There you go. and well, considering how many shows you've produced in Florida, it fits. You know, everybody there is working on their third hip by now. So, when I think of Fallsburg, I think of Virginia. Is that in upstate New York? Where is Fallsburg in the Catskills?
It's actually South Fallsburg. Fallsburg was just a better title. South Fallsburg is in the heart of the Catskills. It's where, oh my God, the Pines Hotel, the Rolling Hotel, it was just a hop, skip, and a jump away from Kiamisha Lake, where the Concord was.
Kiamisha
Lake. A couple miles away from Monticello. We were right in the heart of everything.
So your family, did they have a bungalow, or what did they do? They lived there, or
what? We had a bungalow. It was Nan Acres Bungalow Colony. It was the Sales family that ran it. It was right across the street from the Pines Hotel, and we were just in paradise. I mean, I spent the first 15 summers of my life up there. Met some lifelong friends who are all going to be there on opening night next Monday night on the 3rd, our official opening. It's all coming. It's going to be like a big Nan Acres Bungalow Colony reunion, only now we're all old.
Well, let me ask you, what was special for you about growing up?
You know,
yeah.
You know, there's even a song in the show. It was all so simple. And there's a song in the show that I wrote called Simple Things to Remember, because it was all so simple. What was it? It's just that we grew up in the city, and what do you do with the kids in the city in the summertime? There was nothing for us to do. So our parents brought us up to the bungalows. We were in the mountains. It was cooler. Mm. There were pinball machines. There was a pool table. There were pools. There were friends. There were da-da-da. And then we had the big hotels across the street that we could sneak into and steal things from. And it was just... It's an experience that you really almost can't describe, but if you come see the show, I think everybody's going to get it, because it left such an impression on me, such a mark on me. And again, I didn't grow up in the Catskills in its heyday. I grew up in the Catskills in its way out. I mean, it was in the 70s. We first started going to Nan Acres, late 60s, and our last summer up there was 1977. And it was just when the Catskills were really starting to go through their demise, and some of the hotels were closing, and our bungalow colony eventually had to get sold off. And that's what so much of the show was really about. And just what an indelible mark it left on me, because it really did. I mean, I started performing in the Catskills when I was six years old. When I was 9 years old, the people in my bungalow colony put a show together just for me. They put on a production of Fiddler on the Roof, and I actually played Tevye at 9 years old.
Wow!
I won the talent contest at the Pines a couple of years later, and I learned everything about what I've been doing and busting my butt for the last 50 years up there.
Well, first of all, I'm wondering what amazing insights and differences you brought to your Tevye that, say, Theodore Bekele or Zero Mostel didn't. Did you have a particular take?
Yes. 9 years old. I'm not sure I had any great insights when I was 9 years old. It was just that I pulled it off. I think that was a miracle.
There you go. That was a miracle, too.
When I was a teenager and I had actually gone pro by then, there wasn't a production of Fiddler on the Roof in regional theater in New York where I actually didn't play the Russian kid who sings the Russian solo into life. I was the only one who could hit the notes. And
well, that's what you do have a kind of...
Years.
You do have a sort of, it isn't a soprano voice, but you can go pretty high in your vocal range. Did you?
I'm a tenor.
You are a tenor. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not quite the tenor I was when I was 25, but I'm still a tenor.
So, let me ask you, was there ever any thought of being anything else but in the theater in your life?
Not really. Well, in music, in singing, actually, I really didn't get involved in professional theater until I was in my 20s. When I was in my late teens and early 20s, I was a lead singer in a rock band called 101. We're a great success. We toured all over the metropolitan area, had a great time, and then just all of a sudden, I wound up working in a production company, you know, a Broadway theatrical production company, and started getting involved in the shows and wound up being a musical theater person. And then when I was 29, I started actually writing shows myself. I had been in a long, long, long run of a show called Paper Soul that was basically the immigrant experience. It was all Yiddish theater. I didn't know a word. I'm a fourth-generation American kid from Queens. I didn't know a word of Yiddish, but I was on the road for 7 years with this show that took me 18 months to learn.
Now, wait, did you help create the show, or you were just acting in it, or what? Paved with gold.
It was a two-person show. I was basically just acting in it, but then as times changed on the road and we started to go to some more obscure cities like Nashville and Kansas City, Kansas, and we decided it would be best to get some more English into it, so I started writing translations and parody lyrics for a lot of the old theater songs because people around the country weren't quite getting it.
Right.
And that turned me into a writer. Then when that was over, I started writing my own shows. First show after that, I was 29. It was a show called Meet Me at the 15, about the 15 Theater in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
About a bunch of kids growing up in the swing era that were ushers at the 15 Theater, putting their own act together, and it got professionally produced over the whole country, had a hugely successful run in Florida, and has been produced every 5 years since. And that was like 1996 or so. One of the biggest hits I ever had. And I've been writing and performing basically ever since.
Now, what's really interesting is that you've done a bunch of different shows like Meet Me at the Picton, Bungalow Bunnies, I love that,
yes.
Snowbirds, Midlife Madness, but not in New York. It's as if you dug everywhere but New York until now. Why is that?
Actually, Meet Me at the Picton had its premiere in New York.
Oh.
Not in the city, but at Queens Theater in the Park. I was still living in New York then. I moved to Florida in 97, and it was basically because my product was just, that's where my audience was. And even most of my audience growing up, when we did Paper with Gold and Mickey at the Pitkin in New York, they were all moving to Florida. And I found myself on the condo circuit and being down here like every 2 weeks. And then I got divorced in 1997. It just didn't make any sense to pay New York rent anymore, and I wound up moving down there, and I never left.
Well, was it a big change? I mean, you were a young man when you moved to Florida the first time.
I was 32.
Were you comfortable there, or did you really miss New York for a while?
I missed it for a while. It was good to have a change of pace. Listen, you can't beat the weather. You can't beat going out on New Year's Day in shorts and a t-shirt in 78-degree weather with the sun shining. You can't beat that.
Well, yeah, but you're also...
It's an entirely different life. You know, you got to get used to the pace and so forth, but it's been 18 years. I'm used to it already. Now I'm going to New York. I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to deal up there even after 32 years.
Well, it's hot and sunny now, you know, while you're here, so won't be
it's
that
hotter
different.
In New York than it is in Florida this week.
Well, what gave you the impetus to do your current show, What I Learned in Fallsburg, now bringing it to... Off-Broadway. Sorry? Now you're bringing this to New York.
What happened was, we were running a theater in Delray Beach last year, and the big summer musical that we had going, and again, you know, Florida is very seasonal. You have to be very careful what you're doing in the summertime to make sure you get people in. Mm. And unfortunately, the show that we were doing, the musical, it was actually a reproduction of the Mike Coleman show, The Light, it ran its scheduled run. It didn't extend as much as it did the first time we did it, so we wound up closing it in July. And we didn't have our big season opening until early October, right after the Jewish holidays, which is generally when everything starts to kick in down here.
Right.
And I said, you know what? I got to do a play solo. We still have to pay the rent. We still have to pay everybody. Let me just, I've never been on stage myself, and I really never did. I said, so let me take my show Bungalow Bunnies, which is my Catskill musical, which was a silly part that was fun as can be about the bungalow experience. But I said, let me make it personal and put together a nightclub act. And I got some backup singers, and we got a live band, and we were just going to do it for two nights. And it did so well, and the audience loved it so much. We were selling so well, it wound up running for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Great reviews. We were shocked. And it actually, once I actually got out there and I saw how much the audience was loving the material, I started to expand on it, and it was no longer a nightclub act. It actually became just a theater, which it is now. I mean, it has the beginning, the middle, and the end. And everybody was telling us, it's something you need to bring to New York. So we finished our last season in April, and my husband and I moved up to New York. Flew up to New York and found the people at the Triad, which are great people. Made a great deal with them, and here we go.
Mazel, by the way, I have to ask, you say very casually, my husband and I.
Yeah.
Are you officially, do you just call him that, or did you get officially married now that everybody's able to?
January 6th. Midnight, stroke of midnight on January 6th is when it became legal in Florida. We ran to the courthouse on a whim.
Right.
Got married by the county clerk with 96 other people, and then had a formal wedding on a real anniversary, which was January 30th. Actually, we had a show that night running. I was starring in Shenandoah, the old Broadway musical, in our theater, and we had the big reception after that, so we were able to maintain our real anniversary. We've been together almost 18 years already.
It's legal.
And I make a joke about it. Everybody says, oh, you've been together so long, it's a piece of paper. Not a piece of paper. It means so much more, and you don't even realize it. But as soon as we left the courthouse with that piece of paper, I realized I hate him so much more than I did before.
I was wondering about that. I'm wondering, how badly do you get along now that you're stuck together for life, legally?
My husband Jameson and I have been together for 18 years. I met him, he was so much younger than me. He was still in college when I moved down to Florida. I was actually married to a wonderfully beautiful woman, and then at 32 realized I was, not living the life that I should be, and the whole world changed, and all of a sudden things became acceptable, and that was another reason I moved to Florida, just to start my life over again, and I met Jameson right away. He's almost 13 years younger than me, but he started out just working for me in the box office, and then within a few months took over my whole business and became the lead producer, and I was just the artistic director. So we not only live together, and we work together, we are together 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Gewalt.
Everything together, to the point where everybody thinks we're the same person.
Well, I don't know, if I had to do that with my wife 24-7, I would blow my brains out. Let me tell you. If I see my wife half an hour a day, I want to blow my brains. No, I'm kidding. But that's right. You mentioned before you were divorced. You're married to a beautiful woman. I mean, were you like Bruce Jenner denying something, or did you just think you were straight and one day, oh, no, I'm not?
No. I knew when I was a kid, but it's like, it's just, I graduated from high school in 1983. People just didn't do that. I didn't know one gay person in high school ever. Now the kids that I work with, I mean, they're not kids to me, they're kids. They're in their early 20s. The singers in the show who are phenomenally talented, Chelsea, Elijah, and Jonathan, they, just graduated high school a few years ago. To them, I always say, we all think the baby boomers all think that generation is so flighty and da da da, but they're going to leave the world a better place. They really are. They're just so much more accepting, and the world has really, really, really changed. And, I mean, it was a combination of, first of all, really getting into the theater business and going on the road and doing all that. I was surrounded by more and more people who were like myself, and it just became more and more obvious that I was robbing myself of my real life. And, my marriage broke up for that reason primarily, but for some other reasons.
Sure, oh no, of
course. And we parted the best of friends, actually. My wife, Sadness, was my co-star in Paved with Gold. We were on the road for 7 years together. She's also a tremendous performer, also a senior vice president at Merrill Lynch Bank of America. She's just this phenomenal lady. But, I mean, you know, you can fall in love with somebody, and that never goes away, but you still, you know, at some point, you got to live your life. You got to be who you are. And I realized that at 32. It took a couple of shrinks and a couple of starvations because I couldn't eat for a year. But my life changed, turned around, and I got a new life.
I mean, man, you seem pretty damn happy with this life, and why not? You've got the
damn happy with my new life.
A guy you love, and you're doing theater. All you do—that's your life—is creating theater in
doing everything I love.
The venue that you.
I mean,
yeah.
I love to write. I love to write lyrics. I love to write music. I love to direct. I mean, directing is really basically my main job.
What is your main job? I'm sorry.
I'm mostly a stage director. I actually didn't even really perform all that much for like 10 years, up until like 2-3 years ago. Because you go through that period, I mean, every actor hits that spot where you're too young to play the kid and the, you know, the young love interest or the, you know, and I'm too old and too young to play the father or whatever.
Right.
You get through that period in your late 30s, early 40s, where there really aren't that many roles for you. And I just sort of just leaned in on writing and directing instead. And then a few years ago, it all of a sudden became obvious, you know what? You can play all those roles now.
That's right.
Now I'm 50. Now I can play whatever I want to play. I could be grandpa, I could be papa, I could be anybody.
Now, your website mentions a bunch of people that you have worked with in some capacity, maybe because they played at the venues that you and your husband run or something like that. But I'd love to know some stories or some memories of people who crossed paths with you. For example, like Vladimir Horowitz. Tell me about Vladimir Horowitz.
Vladimir Horowitz, actually, the story with Vladimir, and this is a great story, actually, right before I started working for that production company, I used to run my own employment agency in New York in the 80s, in the Reagan years, when people actually paid to get employees, which is like insane to even believe now that actually happened. But it was a thriving business in the 80s, and I started my own business. Actually, I was only 19, and one of my biggest clients was Columbia Artist Management, which is the main classical music artist agency on the planet. And I became very friendly with all of them. And Vladimir Horowitz, of course, was one of their biggest clients. And he always needed a new personal assistant or whatever, and I was always the person to find it. But it wasn't just a phone call. With Vladimir, I had actually bring people to the house. Him and his wife, who was 15, his daughter, he used to sit me down for coffee or tea in their beautiful townhouse on the Upper East Side. And we would sit with his new assistant, and we developed a really nice friendship.
Very nice.
Really, really nice people.
Were there people that from Columbia Artist Management who had really weird requests or creepy things that they wanted from their assistants?
Certainly not him.
Well, not him. No, I'm saying about others.
Certainly not him. No, most of the people that I placed in jobs at Columbia, I was not even really on the creative side. My specialty was finding jobs for recent college grads looking for jobs in the music business. And then eventually I found myself a job in the music business and in the theater business and right. Wound up leaving the personnel business. And it doesn't matter because the personnel business folded disappeared anyway. So then I just became a full-time. I mean, I was always doing theater. I mean, I had my equity card even while I was doing that. But I still had a day job. But then I'd say by like 24, 25, I just became a full-time theater.
Right. Yeah, but I'm curious about some other folks that you mentioned on your site that you, either as the personnel...
Oh, I've worked with lots of great people.
Well, like Joan Rivers. Do you remember anything about Joan Rivers?
Joan Rivers, I actually didn't even 1,000% work with, although I kind of did, because I was backstage with her when she was going on. We did a... I used to book a lot of artists. Back when I first started in the business, when I was up in New York, I used to book a lot of celebrities in for major events. And we were doing a big tribute at the Plaza for the Israeli Philharmonic, and the headliners were Joan and Itzhak Berman.
Oh,
and
wow.
We were backstage. I mean, we were there. Well, they donated their time, so you know, it was both pro bono thing. But I did get to hang out with them backstage and spend the evening with them. Great, great people. And Joan is actually, you know, I wish I could have known her better. She had that online that on TV persona that she was such a tough broad, and she was such a sweetheart.
Mm.
Such a nice lady. And everybody I know who's worked for her said the same thing. That was just an act. What she went on stage with, she was the funniest person in the world, and it was an act. That was not her. She was like mommy. She was the sweetest lady.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Left her way too soon.
Now let me ask you, someone that, this is the kind of person that I wish I was able to interview now if they were still alive. This is someone I wish we could have on the show. You, Steve Allen, the great talk show host, also the writer, the composer. Steve Allen, did you know him?
I knew him real well. Steve Allen wrote a show back in, I think it was the late 70s. It was a review of a bunch of ridiculously funny, Steve Allen was just a ridiculously funny person and a very prolific songwriter, and he threw together a review that ran very briefly off Broadway. It was a parody on Jacques Brel's Alive and Well and Living in Paris.
Right.
It was called Seymour Glick is Alive but Sick.
Right, and later on he re-revised it
in Florida.
Yeah.
And I contacted his son, who was actually his manager, and they were all excited because somebody had some interest in remounting the show. And I put it together for a run in Florida, and Steve flew down. We rewrote some material together. We were both staying at the Colony Hotel in Palm Beach, I remember. And I remember meeting him for breakfast that very first morning, and he came into the restaurant at the Colony, an old, old, frail man, very, very tall. I'll never forget, he was very tall.
Mm-hmm.
Old, frail man. I was thinking, oh my God, this is like my hero. I sat down, started eating breakfast, and turned into Steve Allen, and he could have been 30 years old.
Wow.
That old man just disappeared as soon as we started talking show business. It was only a year or two before he passed away. But, you know, those old-time show business people that had it in their blood, that I hope to be one day, they just get into a conversation or they get on stage or whatever, and the business just, it's like giving them a shot of adrenaline the size of a minivan.
And did he carry?
And with Steve Allen, I was like on a radio show. I loved it. Again, such a sweet man. There are no words. Such a great guy. Show business, so in his blood, but just a normal, regular guy that he could just sit and have breakfast with and laugh and talk. That was a great couple of weeks.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm so envious of that. Did he carry a tape recorder with him? Was he doing the thing where if he had an idea, he would stop and suddenly...
It was just him. It was just him and me. We spent almost 2 weeks together.
Wow.
Staying at that hotel, rewriting the show, and most of it was involved food. He couldn't work unless he was eating.
Okay. I know the feeling.
We've been in that Colony coffee shop downstairs for the dining room, whatever. Oh, God, this was a long time ago. It was like 97, I think. And just rewrite some of the material, update some of the material together. I wrote some of the stuff that he loved. Kept his name on it, of course, but we just had a great time. And he's just such a funny, funny, funny man in real life and, you know, on stage or on the radio.
Well, were there any people whose paths you crossed who were sort of the opposite? I know it's not nice to talk ill of people, but if they're dead, who cares? So were there any people you wouldn't...
Of course there were, but I'm not going to tell you.
Come on! Come on. If they're dead, who cares? You know, you can get back at them.
I'm sure of my dear people. I won't even tell you.
Well, can you tell us...
It was one example, but I'm not going to tell you who it was.
Okay, fair enough.
It was a celebrity that we were doing a show in... I think it was out on Long Island at some big college theater. I don't even remember. I was still married to my ex-wife. And she had a writer, a backstage writer of everything she needed. Now, this was just a Sunday afternoon performance. She was getting there at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, going on a tour, whatever. It was a grocery list like you've never seen in your life. I mean, so many celebrities have that, but this one was just, it was hysterical. And my ex-wife and I are in Wallbow, in Douglaston. And it was late at night, the night before the show. And my ex-wife actually leaned over and grabbed the pen again and said, "Does she need Gans?" Because it was so ridiculous. And then we put everything in our own
Yeah.
Then just let no matter what they were all done. All our China, all our, it was off. It was just packed up and left with,
yes, with her.
Celebrity.
Oh, but you don't, now wouldn't you want to, the world to know who this
and
was?
And I'll tell you right now, I gotta say this, because everybody's gonna think it's Lainey. It was not Lainey. Lainey was my pal. I was Lainey Kazan's manager for a year and a half, and she's still a great friend of mine. I was friends with her before that. I had a great time with Lainey.
What is Lainey Kazan really like? We have to know. Lainey Kazan, tell us.
Lainey Kazan is like your next door neighbor.
Wow.
Hanging out with Lainey, I mean, when she's performing, she is just, you know, I mean, first of all, she's one of the best singers of her generation. I always thought so. Working with her, she taught me so much, even myself. Even though I was already a pro when I started working with her and managing her, her phrasing and her diction and the way she just attacks every single lyric that she sings, I caught it like a virus. And it's with me now. You can see it in this show. There's so much Lainey influence in my singing voice. Tremendous performer, tremendous professional, and very serious. And yeah, she's a celebrity and gets a little nervous. But, you know, we all do. Lainey and I got along amazingly well. And we traveled the whole country together. The only reason that situation really ended is because I got too busy doing Paper with Gold and I wasn't around enough.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know, we respectfully just parted our business relationship, but we're still friends to this day. I've been trying to reach her, but I've been so crazy. I'm hoping she's in New York, but we're doing this one. I'd love her to come.
Well, you have to promise us to get Lainey on this radio show. She's one of my idol people of all time.
That.
What?
That's easy. Lainey will love it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd love to talk to Lainey Kazan. I can't believe...
Lainey's just a regular person, a really, really great gal to hang out with, yeah, I can't say enough.
I'm 1 degree removed from Lainey Kazan at this moment. I can't believe it. Let me ask you, who else? Who else? If you wanted to tell a really wonderful, nice, happy celebrity story of people that you've met and worked with, who else would you?
Let me think. Oh, well, to me.
Yeah.
And it was a short stint. We only worked 1 weekend together. I produced a concert with her, again at some college. I think it was out on Long Island. But Leslie Uggams.
Huh.
To me, is probably probably the biggest star I ever met in my eyes, because I have never seen a human being walk into the room and automatically the lights just get fired up. I mean, she has such magnetism and such an enormously gracious, sweet, classy gal, her and her husband, who's her manager, I forgot his name.
Okay.
But I did that one show with Leslie. I wish I could have done more. Again, at that point, I was not really producing many concerts anymore, so we never really worked together again. But she was one of my favorite ever. And Marilyn Michaels, who again I just ran into a few weeks ago, actually a couple of months ago at the Iridium for Colin Wyman, had a big comeback concert. We were sitting next to each other. I haven't seen Marilyn in probably 20 years. We did one show together. I had booked her. It was a benefit with Donna Hanna with Giuliani right before the big divorce scandal.
Wow.
In the Forest Park band show. And I actually picked Marilyn up at her apartment in New York. And we drove out to Queens for the band show. And lo and behold, there's no dress.
Oh.
And she was in street clothes. She had a costume with her. There was no, but she was such a trooper. And I just closed all the doors in my car. And she just changed my car. I actually reminded her of it when I met her. It's been 20 years, and she remembered it also. Is it probably you?
Why couldn't she have just used a bathroom there instead of doing it in the car? I'm wondering.
Well, but even a bathroom. It was an open-air concert. They were like porta-potties.
Oh, my God. Oh, so it was a big... Oh, yeah.
There were people there. There was no way for her to change. She had used the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a funny story.
Now, we're talking, of course, with Gary Waldman. He's got his show, What I Learned in Fallsburg, that is happening now through early September, or perhaps it might extend beyond that. It's at Stage 70.
Hoping.
Stage 72, which is up on 72nd Street at Columbus Avenue. You can all go see it. You can also check out Gary Waldman's YouTube channel, where he has pieces of shows that he has produced, and also little clips of his Danny Kaye show and some other things you can watch there. I have to get just a hint negative, because I would be remiss if I were not to ask some of these questions. But a few years ago, you and your husband and your business partner had some issues with Florida, I guess, with unions and things. What the hell went on there? I mean, it really sounded kind of bad.
It's old news. It was really stupid. It was really way out of proportion. It is just nothing, and I will not comment on it anymore. It's just so stupid.
Okay. All right, so there's that.
Businesses have their ups and downs. That's it.
Okay. No, I mean, it was just...
Everything gets exaggerated to the point where it's ridiculous. I don't even comment on it anymore. I used to comment on it. It got me in more trouble. I don't even comment on it anymore.
Don't even comment. All right, so...
I had shows that didn't do well. Who hasn't?
Right, but you can't be like Zero Mostel and the producers and not pay people, but that would...
No, it was nothing like that.
Wasn't like... Okay,
nothing
good.
Nothing like that. No.
But you do have posted on one of your YouTube things that you had a bad time at a casino, like an IP casino, with a show.
I did.
When you were really ticked off at them. What went wrong? What happened there?
Again, I don't like to go into negative stuff on the radio. It was just... My show, I had the songs, which is was a Barry Manilow pop opera.
Uh-huh.
It was a big success down in Florida. Then it was picked up by the IP casino in Biloxi. We actually moved to Biloxi, Mississippi, which to me is another country. I didn't know where I was. I didn't even speak the language. I my head was spinning.
Right.
And
you were doing a Paul Simon show.
We opened this beautiful show. It was very well, but we had problems getting paid and whatever. It's again old news.
Yeah,
old
no, but
news
that
over.
Yeah, that sounded like something where you were angry at them rather than the other way around. That's you know, something where you said, "Oh yeah, these are horrible people. I'm gonna go back there," as opposed to, you know, a back and forth of two people.
It's Mississippi. Yeah. South has to learn that we have a constitution and there are laws in this country. Unfortunately, they make their own. And if you're a big enough good old boy, nobody can sue you.
Wow.
You just can't be touched. It's a different country. I could have been working in Portugal.
Well, here's a suggestion for you. If you ever do one of your review musicals and you do Phil Oakes, he has a song about Mississippi that you might want to throw in there. Just for your own, yeah. Here's to the state of Mississippi. It's back when they were lynching people, etc.
We were actually there. We knew there about 6 months after the screening.
Wait, you're breaking up there on the cell phone. What were you saying?
Sorry.
Yeah.
We moved there about 6 months after Katrina. That's when this was booked. And, you know, all the publicity, obviously the horror in New Orleans and the flooding and the deaths and everything is so bad. But the actual brunt of the storm really hit the Mississippi coast much worse than New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
Just had the levee break, you know, and it became flooded. But it was really Biloxi and, you know, all the beach suburbs of Biloxi between Mobile and New Orleans that really got the brunt of the wind and the storm. I mean, that town was wiped out. I mean, they had the casinos there. Now I think they have land-based campers. But back when we were there, they all had to be water-based. So basically, I mean, all the big casinos, MGM, they built these giant barges on the water, you know, on the Gulf, and the hotel was on the ground, but the barge had the casino on it, so it was, you know, it's just paused. But when we got there, those casino barges had actually washed over the highway. Entire casinos were just pushed up and washed across the highway.
Well, it makes it very easy to get into them. Just, you know, pull over and walk in.
So that town was wiped out. It was really sad. It was really sad. I've never seen anything like it. We arrived in the middle of the night. It was black. You know, it was very dark out, and we really couldn't tell. And I woke up in the motel on the beach the next morning, and I went out to look for a newspaper, and I couldn't even where I was. It was like Afghanistan. You know, it was completely wiped out. There would be golden arches and things like with no McDonald's under them, just a sign. That's all that's left. And they left them up so people knew where they were, because you couldn't even find where you were. It was so wiped out. And the casinos, thank God for the people in Biloxi, were the only people functioning. They all had generators. They had action bank.
Oh, yeah.
So they opened their wallets and they opened their doors to all the people there. And, you know, they gained such favor with the politicians and even with the population there that you just couldn't fight them. If you had a real problem, there was just no fighting them. We went to 9 attorneys and they all said, we have a rock solid case. Go ask another lawyer.
Because I just, yeah, well, okay. I mean, I there's two sides to everything I have. So can I ask you, are you working, I mean, I know obviously you're doing your current show now, but are you working on any other reviews of, you know, the people that you've done? Like, you did the Paul Simon review, you've done a Manilow review, you've done Catskills. Are there any other?
Paul Simon and the Manilow show are really not reviews. They're really not. They're
pop operas.
Oh. People are always so surprised, especially Sounds of Science, which is going to be our next big project. We had an enormous success with it in Florida last year. Again, we did it as a summer experiment at a new theater in Boca, beautiful little space in Mysore Park. And it did so phenomenally well, we wound up running for a year and actually built our own theater space from it until the roof collapsed. Love story. But that's our next big project after this. I mean, we got to see how well Baltimore goes. Are we going to book it in other towns? Are we going to expand and blah, blah, blah? And we've got everything we have and, you know, official for this now. But in the back of our minds, that's our next big thing. It needs to get out of Florida and be seen in other places because it really, it tells a story through Paul Simon's lyrics. It doesn't have a spoken word in the whole show, but it actually does. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And,
Has Paul Simon seen it? Has Paul Simon seen it? Has he commented? Have you been in touch with Paul Simon?
We've spoken with his brother.
Okay.
I believe it's his brother's manager. He first did it. Just wanted to make sure that he was covered rights-wise, which we were, of course. I'm in the show also in Sansa Sun.
Ah, okay.
And it's always my dream. I'm always thinking somebody's going to surprise me and I'm going to come off stage and pull back.
Yeah.
Because I think he'd love it. I really think he'd love it. I mean, it's a love story to him that I think he would really be blown away by it.
Well, all I can say is that I hope you get to bring Sounds of Simon to venues like New York and to other places around the country. I hope.
They're looking for Broadway for Sounds of Simon. Sounds of Simon needs to be on Broadway.
Wow.
Big shows. With 20 people in it, a full ensemble. Full orchestrations. It's a Broadway show. Is it?
Well, you are thinking.
Or at least a very big off-Broadway theater like Lamb's Club or something like that.
What would be a big, I don't know, even the 400-seaters or
Union Square. There's something.
Yeah, Union Square would do it. That would be a place for it. Yeah. Anywho.
Yeah, someplace like that. I don't think it would fit on stage with the Triad as much as I love working there and I love the people there. I'm not sure it would fit on that stage being small. I mean, Paul's there. It's a beautiful, intimate space, and they fixed it up so beautifully. And last time I was in that building, the back of the Speak of Rose, and I saw the original Forever Flag in there.
Yes, Forever Flag. It was called before it was called the Triad. What was it? It was the...
Steve McGraw's.
Steve McGraw's Supper Club, that's right.
Yep.
Memories.
The last time I was in that building, and then we came back a couple of months ago to put this gig together. And, oh, boy, they make a beautiful theater out of it. It looks like a small, old-fashioned opera house or real Broadway theater with. And it's just beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, boy.
Most of Broadway theaters are holes.
No, not anymore. Maybe awful.
Oh, all right.
You need to see some more off-Broadway theater. And listeners, you need to go to Stage 72, right on 72nd Street and Columbus Avenue to see What I Learned in Fallsburg, featuring our guest in the neighborhood, Gary Waldman. He's there doing the show through the first week of September, possibly more if audience demand allows it, and hopefully it will, because he's been such a delightful guest in the neighborhood. I want to wish you success with that show, success with all your projects, and of course, you know, good times with your husband in Florida, the Jewish Valhalla, which basically it is, you know.
That's what it is.
So, what's one more beloved memory to go out with that you have of growing up in the Catskill and Borscht Belt area?
Oh, God, I could talk for an hour about that. You want to know something?
Sure.
I can give you a really good piece of advice. You want beloved members of the Catskills? Come see What I Learned from Fallsburg at the Triad, the opening. Previews on Saturday, open officially on Monday, and get it all.
All right. I just did a pitch for your show, and then after that, you do another pitch.
Fallsburgshow.com. That's where you get your tickets.
What was it again?
Fallsburgshow.com.
Fallsburg, F-A-L-L-S-B-U-R-G. Fallsburgshow.com. Get your tickets there for Gary Waldman in What I Learned in Fallsburg. Mr. Waldman, thank you so much for being in the neighborhood with us, and shalom.
Pleasure, and thank you, and shalom.